You're listening to Talking Baseball with Ed Randall, presented by MLB.com. He's Ed Randall. He's talking baseball. What more do you need?
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, Big Ed and Nora's baby boy, and welcome back to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. We're one of the most fascinating people in the game, and that is the bench coach of the Atlanta Braves, Carlos Tosca, who never played professional baseball and yet is in his 39th season around the game. I welcome you to the big show, but first I want to talk about something else. You were born in Cuba, and as we record this, the first United States cruise ship has docked in Cuba. Your thoughts?
Well, I think that's interesting. The one thing that that you have to remember is that my thoughts of my final year or so in Cuba weren't real happy ones. And so I still have some hurt in me, and I'm not certain where this is going with our country and their country. I'm glad that that the Cuban people are able to see what it's like to be free. And I'm certain that there's plenty of people that want to go over to the country because it's a beautiful country. I'm not yet ready to do that.
How old were you when you left?
8 years old.
And what are your memories of that?
Well, my mother was an American. My father was Cuban. My father chose to stay there thinking that this thing would kind of blow over. And then shortly after that...
Never could have imagined that Castro would last this long.
Correct. And a couple of months after we left, they came to his house, confiscated his house, both houses, put him in prison, and said that he was supporting the American CIA because he was sending us money. The last couple of months in Cuba before we left, as Castro was making a push to overthrow the government, which the Batista government wasn't a real good government anyway. But we were not able to go to movie theaters, public places, because they were blowing places up to kind of terrorize people.
What do you remember about your trip from Cuba? Do you have a recollection of that, even though you were 8 years old?
Yes, I remember getting to the airport, and I have a twin brother, and. The only thing that we wanted to bring to the United States was our ball and our glove, and they confiscated those from us at the airport. So, and I can remember them putting us in a glass room with my family, me and my father and his uncle, his cousins and everybody else on the other side, and just before we left. The flight, I can remember getting on the airplane. I don't remember how long the flight was. And I can remember landing, and my mother's uncle picked us up.
This was in where, Miami?
This was in Miami, and my mother's uncle picked us up and drove us back from Miami to Sefner, Florida.
But you left your life behind and your little friends, and we cannot imagine what that process could possibly be like.
Yeah, it was, you know, when you're 8 years old, You don't exactly understand what's going on, but you do know that you're going to miss people, and you don't know if you're ever going to see them again. Now, fortunately for me, my father got to come over and had a tremendous life here. His parents came over. I don't think there was anyone in our family that was young enough to be able to move, to travel, that did not come over to the United States. So we were able to... see each other again and spend time again and that type of stuff.
Whom did you travel with beside your twin brother?
I have an older sister and a younger brother, so there's four of us, and then my mother. So my sister, I think, might have had a doll that they took from her, and it was just, it was a sad day.
And how much of your family was left behind? Do you have a large family?
Yes, my grandmother and my grandfather both came from large families, but as I mentioned, I can't remember anyone that I knew that did not come over to the United States and move to Miami. Mm-hmm. Some of them moved to New Jersey, some of them came to the United States, stayed in the United States for a while, and then moved to places like Puerto Rico.
Have you been back, and would you like to be back there?
I have not been back, and until a new form of government or a new type of leadership takes over there, I probably will will not have any desire to go there.
What were your thoughts when the president announced the reestablishment of diplomatic relations?
I thought it was good because, again, you're talking about a country that hasn't seen some of the things that freedom can grant or freedom can do. And anytime that can be exposed, that's obviously good. I just hope that that people understand, including our government, that there are still people in charge there that have different political views than we do.
I can't imagine what it must have been like, what it could have been like for you had baseball chosen the Atlanta Braves to go and play that game against the Cuban national team rather than the Tampa Bay Rays.
Well, we knew that there might have been a chance for us to go, and Freddie spoke to us about it because we have three Cubans on our – Freddie's Cuban, Jose Castro, our assistant hitting coach, is Cuban, and myself. And we were willing to go, but we weren't willing to shake hands with certain people.
You're very diplomatic, talking about something that's very diplomatic. We're with Carlos Tosca, the bench coach with the Atlanta Braves, talking about his fascinating life. You grow up in Florida. You coach high school in 1976 in Florida with an aspiration to get into professional ball or not?
Oh, I had no – I mean, obviously I wanted to coach, but I never had any dreams. I've never had any idea that I would have an opportunity to work in professional baseball.
And so how did that come about when you wound up with the Yankees 2 years after beginning your high school college career, this in 1978?
Well, I was very lucky. I played college baseball at the University of South Florida, which is in Tampa, and my coach was Jack Butterfield, who became the director of player development and scouting director for the New York Yankees, and gave me an opportunity to work in Oneonta, New York, just during the summers. And so I got that's where I got my start. The next year, they started extending.
So when he offered you this job, this was like a summer job, right?
Yeah, it was some summer job working for the New York Yankees.
Wow! My high school season's over. Carlos, what are you going to do for the summer? Oh, I'm going to go work for the Yankees in Oneonta.
Yeah, it was, I had to, you know, obviously it was a dream. And it was, and even after I got to Oneonta, it was, I couldn't believe that I was, we actually made a trip before that, before we started. During spring break, we made a trip down to Lauderdale and spent a week down there hitting fungos and throwing batting practice and that type of stuff. So that was the first time I was able to don those pinstripes on, and that was pretty special.
And who was on that first team in Oneonta that we've come to know?
There's 2 years, and my first 2 years I get mixed up, but I believe that Don Mattingly was on that team. I'm trying to think of who else was on that team. There was a Rafael Villamon that played a little bit with the Yankees, an infielder. Victor Mata, who played a little bit.
Outfielder. Who's your manager?
Art Masmanian.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So after the first year in Oneonta, you went back to coach high school baseball?
I went back to coach. And actually, I was helping coach baseball, but I was teaching at a junior high school. And Jack called me and said, hey, there's a new program starting out called Extended Spring Training Program. Can you go over there on the weekends? I went over there on the weekends. They weren't playing on Sundays and Saturdays. They did 10 o'clock games. So I said, listen, I said, I'm not married. I said, I'll quit this job if and I'll go over there during the week, you know. And he said, okay, we'll do that. And so that led into me going full time with him.
Wow. It's an unbelievable story.
Well, it's been a pretty good ride. Let me put it that way.
Wow. So you go to Oneonta in 1978. Years later, Buck Showalter started there. Actually, that's where I first met him. Bernie Williams started there. And then 2 years after you begin coaching in 1978, 1980, you get your first job as a manager.
Yes. Bill Livesey was the farm director because Jack Butterfield had been killed in an automobile accident.
It was terrible.
Yep. And so Bill Livesey asked me if I wanted to manage the Gulf Coast League team. And I said, absolutely. You know, I've never managed before, but I'll be more than happy to take over and do that. And I did. And I did it for, I think, 3 years before I moved up to A-ball.
Who do you have on those clubs?
I had Freddie McGriff.
Oof.
I had Jose Rijo. Who else? McGriff, Rijo. I'm getting old, Ed. I'm getting old. But those are the two main guys that I remember that ended up being stars in the big leagues.
Neither for the Yankees, but that was the way it was because they ate their young back then. Carlos Tosca is with us. He's the bench coach with the Atlanta Braves on Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. 17 years in the minor leagues. You won over 900 games. You had a lifetime winning percentage of 530. During all of this time, did you aspire to be a major league manager?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I once I got in and had some success, then I had aspirations. I didn't think I'd ever be a major league manager, but I thought maybe I could get to the major leagues as a coach.
And you did, and then eventually, though, succeeded Buck Martinez as the manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, and in doing so became just the sixth man in history to have managed without professional playing experience.
Yeah, that was a pretty special day, and it was a special time for me, and I loved being in Toronto.
Tell us about that special day.
Well, I'd gotten a call in the morning from J.P. Ricciardi saying that they were going to let Buck go and give me an opportunity to manage the team. And, I was like, the day just flew. I mean, it just flew by. I did a press conference in the afternoon, tried to be as humble as I could, and things were just flying by. And I was fortunate that there were some good people around me there that kind of helped me settle in and
like who was influential?
Well, the very first day it was Garth Org. Mm-hmm. Brian Butterfield had become my third base coach,
and Jack's son,
and so
life's a circle, isn't it?
yes it is. So he kind of ran kind of the defense that day, and my pitching coach Gil Patterson, who had also pitched for me in the minor leagues, he became my coach. I tried to ask Mark Connor to stay, but he didn't want to stay because he was an excellent pitching coach. So it was a whirlwind of a day.
And what was the experience like managing a major league team?
It was an experience that, this is something that you work and prepare for your entire life, or at least your entire baseball life. And now you have an opportunity to have an impact on a city, and you have an opportunity to have an impact on a team, and try and lead, which is what I like to do.
And what you've always liked to do through your life in baseball is teach.
Absolutely, absolutely. I actually had a player one time when I was managing in AAA who we were releasing, and he told me, and he said it in a nasty way, but it gave me a compliment. He goes, all you are is a teacher. And I said, you know what? You're right. So, yeah, I like to teach. I have a degree in physical education, and it's fun to watch people learn a new skill or have their eyes light up when you can help them fulfill their dream. Mm-hmm.
And now with the Atlanta Braves as their bench coach, where you have many, you're wearing many hats.
I remember my first spring training there, I did everything so Chipper Jones would only have to go to two fields. Because if you go from the stadium all the way down to the last field, that's a pretty good trot to get down there. But we organized small groups. We organized pitching groups. Roger McDowell helps me. And we try and get a lot of reps for the players. And then I let the hitting coach once the meats and potatoes done, then the hitting coach takes over and does the hitting.
But also now as the bench coach, the day-to-day events with the Atlanta Braves, you have a lot to do, and you do a lot of consultation with your fellow coaches.
Yes. I help set the defenses, particularly the infield defense. We have a new department that we have now that helps us, and I kind of coordinate with the young man that's responsible for that. And then I look at film to make sure that what the paper's telling me, I'm seeing with my eyes. So there's a lot of information available to us. As I mentioned earlier, some of it's pretty obvious. Who are you going to play in a shift and who you're not. But there are times when I have to coordinate with Roger and see how we're going to pitch a guy to see if we want to shift a guy or if we're going to stay away from him and those types of things.
It's so much more complex, and it's gotten really complex in the last few years with all of the Sabre attritions and all the people now in the front office and the Braves. And the Braves also with a shift in philosophy becoming a lot more analytical.
Yes, and I'm learning something, you know, and I hope they're learning something from us, because I think it's a marriage that can be had if both sides cooperate and understand that we're both trying to reach the same level, and that's win a world championship.
In all the years that you've done this, did you ever have to put up with questions or with innuendos from other people or stuff that you heard from a third party about, well, you know, he's a great guy, but he never played the game? Did you ever have to deal with that?
Yeah, I've heard those rumblings a few times, and you know, I take pride in the fact that I got to the top of my profession without having played professionally. It's not like I didn't play baseball. I just wasn't good enough for somebody to give me a contract to play baseball. I would have played for free, but you know, I know what it's like to get hit by a pitch. I know what it's like to hit a home run. I know what it's like to strike somebody out. I know what it's like to head first slide, and I think that, you know, the biggest key to this whole Major League Baseball team is to be able to gain respect and to communicate with people. And you know, those are skills, because sometimes there's tough nuts to crack. But one thing I've learned from Major League players is if you can help them, they don't care what your background is. Half of them don't even know. You know, so to their credit, if they're struggling in an area that I can help in, and I can help, they don't care.
How have the players changed in your years?
I think the two things that I see the most are the majority of them have played in organized baseball their entire time, where somebody told them when to get dressed, you know, somebody told them when to go take batting practice, and that type of stuff. And so they're expecting that. There's very few players that'll, you know, you've got some, but that are real pros, like a guy like Nick Markakis. He takes initiative. He takes initiative to go to the video room. He takes initiative to go to the batting cages, where somebody's not telling you or pushing you to go someplace. And I think that the other thing is there's somewhat with certain players, we don't have too many on our team, but there's a sense of entitlement where, hey, you know, you've been here a week, or you've been here 2 months, and you act like you're a 15-year veteran in the league. And I don't know how to fix that. I think you kind of have to just accept that and move forward with it.
It's part of the culture.
It's part of the culture.
It's bigger than the Atlanta Braves.
It's bigger than the Atlanta Braves, you're right.
In your private moments, when you look back on your life, and I'm assuming this unexpected life, going back to being a coach with the Oneonta Yankees in 1976, what goes through your mind?
Well, the one thing that goes through my mind nowadays is it's going to come to an end here. but I just, all the people I've met, all the players I've had, I still see players that played for me that are now become coaches. Mm-hmm. And just the whole machine of professional baseball and the life that you live. And again, just all the people I've met, all the players, and knowing that some were going to become great, and they became great, and they're still humble.
As you are, and you came to the land of opportunity at age 8, chances are this would not have happened had you stayed in Cuba.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And this is the land of opportunity. And, you know, I read things when I was small about, you know, keep plugging away, keep plugging away, keep plugging away. But I never in my wildest dreams thought that I would get to the big leagues and stay in the big leagues for as long as I have.
What an incredible story. What an inspiring story. I thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Ed. I appreciate it.
Man, what an inspiring story. The life of Carlos Tosca, the bench coach with the Atlanta Braves. That'll do it for us on MLB.com. If you were listening on the move, thanks for the ride. And thanks for listening to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball.